I spent a while in a cult when I was younger, and I feel like my faith blinded me.
Probably sitting on your front porch, rocking yourself to sleep. It's the middle of the afternoon, all is well, so seems. She started baking cornbread, just like yesterday. She swept your dirt under the rug, but the ends started to fray. What you call faith, she looks like denial.
Welcome to The Marinade, a free-flowing conversation about the creative process with creative people. This is episode 159, and our guest is Jonathan Payton. Jonathan is a singer and songwriter from Woodstock, Georgia, whose second studio album, Nothing Here's the Same, is now available everywhere. Sadler Vaden produced this incredible record, which touches on Payton's experiences with generational trauma and overcoming its attendant challenges, among other themes. Y'all, I have had the opportunity to live in this record for weeks, and I cannot recommend it enough. It has been such a giving companion. The vinyl is beautiful. Grab a copy of that. I am so excited to have this conversation. We talked about Payton's experiences joining a cult, the layers of his songs, an aborted opening slot for Zach Bryan at Red Rocks, and so much more. It is such an honor to bring you my conversation with Jonathan Payton.
Dude, my copy.
Nice.
Your wonderful record came in. I've got in on that signed pre-order.
Thank
folks,
you so much,
man. Dude, my pleasure. Thank you. You know, I've gotten to spend so much time with this record. Nothing Here is the Same. And I mean, you know, I listen to a lot of records, and I'm fortunate, and then I get to listen to a lot of them in advance, and some of them hit me really hard, and some of them hit me medium, and some of them don't hit me at all. And this one hit me really hard. And so I'm really grateful, because this is an interesting thing about that process, is that sometimes when I listen to a record ahead of time, by the time I actually talk to an artist, and when the record comes out, it's like, I've already worn that damn thing out. Right.
Yeah.
And so it's not that I don't want to listen to it. It's just that I'm not as obsessed with it. But man, I pre-ordered the vinyl. I've been listening to your record for like 2 months. I keep going back to this vinyl as the thing that I want to listen to each night. So first of all, congratulations on this release, man. And thank you so much for this beautiful piece of art.
It feels great. It's weird that it's finally out.
Well, yeah, let's talk about that a little bit. You know, how does it feel? Because it seems from my perspective as like a fan and a commentator on these things that what I see, at least from the online perspective, is everybody's raving about it, as they should. How does it feel from your perspective?
It feels great. You know, we worked with Sadler Vaden on this record, and we started almost 3 years ago with a couple singles. And so anyone that's known our music will notice that some of the old singles are on this record. So all the songs we did with Sadler are on there, but we started a couple singles at a time. And then, but you know, we went in the studio probably 3 or 4 times with him, and you know, it wasn't until maybe the third time that we were like, okay, like we're doing a record. And so it was a long process, but man, I'm so grateful for it. And the fact that it is finally out, and we self-released it. It feels awesome. And there's been, you know, the people that have been following along, they've been waiting for it. And so it just feels like a big celebration, man. It's awesome.
Man, that's great. Yeah, I know that folks, at least folks who I follow and who follow the Marinade, have been looking forward to it, in part because I've been raving about it. But like, yeah, they've been looking forward to it. They're Sadler fans, or they're fans of yours previously anyway. And so it's been cool to see that reaction, like I said, online. But I'm curious about something you just said, which is how long that process took, right? Now, I'm sure in the meantime, you're writing and you're playing shows and you're doing all kinds of things, but still, that's a really long time to stay focused on a particular project. And I know, I get that like some of it kind of came together a little more slowly, but I'm interested in maybe if you could talk a little bit about that process and like the stick-to-itness that it takes to, because it ain't easy making a record, right? And it ain't easy, especially making a follow-up record. And like, there's just a lot of stuff that you were no doubt wading through there. Can you talk about like what that perseverance might have looked like and what kept you going?
Yeah. So, I mean, I reached out to Sadler. I laugh because I reached out to him for almost 2 years before we ever talked. And we finally started talking. And then we did those singles. And then I was kind of like, I don't know where to go from here. I don't know, like, we can be able to do more or what. And then we started talking about doing more. And there's just been different experiences that have motivated us. So, like, you know, we were featured on Zach Bryan's Live at Red Rocks album. Well, some people know that we ended up, you know, we got snowed out. Our set was canceled, the opening set. This is a few years ago. And we ended up in the parking lot. His dad invited us up there, and we ended up putting on an acoustic show, and we sang the song Denial from the album. And we just got so much love from that. So Red Rocks was in November. And then I got home, I called Sadler. I was like, we have to record the song Denial. So I was in the studio in December, and then in January we released it, and it just kind of got the itch to keep doing more. And then we finally got to do some more shows. We knew we were going back to Red Rocks again last summer, and there was just, you know, getting to play with some other people and meet some great, you know, awesome people out on the road and other artists. It was just so motivating to keep going. And we finally were like, okay, we're finishing an album. And we did. We went back to Nashville and made it happen. So, yeah, I would just say each time it was just, we're kind of hanging on these experiences. And it's like, we got to get more out. We got to get more out. And we're here. So
when you say that you were, you know, reaching out to Sadler and it took like a couple of years to make this come to fruition, did you have like a working or personal relationship with Sadler? Were you just like sliding in his DMs or like sending him a carrier pigeon? Like what did that look like, you know, in terms of your initial?
It was DMs. He's a hero of mine. So it's kind of cool. And now we're buddies. And so that's cool too. Like he just happened to, I wasn't like annoying and sending like a million things, but I sent a couple messages over the course of almost 2 years. And I guess he just opened them one day. He's like, hey man, let's talk. And next thing you know, we're up in Nashville in a studio with him. Like, oh crap, this is happening.
Did he know you're
a little songwriter from North Georgia that nobody knows? Like what? Like it was cool.
That's such a wonderful story. And I'm not encouraging everybody to bombard Sadler Vaden's DMs with this, but I am encouraging people to shoot their shot. And cause I think, you know, it sounds like you tastefully shot your shot, and if it hadn't worked out, it hadn't worked out, but it did. Did he know your stuff? Like, was he familiar at first, or what did that look like?
No, I guess, from my understanding, he just listened to what I sent him, and then we connected and started sending him demos and went from there. But yeah, I'll tell anyone if they're trying to reach out to someone, just don't be annoying. That's like my role when reaching out. Don't be annoying.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it is a delicate balance. You know, I've had a lot of great fortune with that kind of thing too, in just like picking my spots. I'm typically I'll reach out once, and if they don't respond, like I can think of one person right now who like it's a dream guest that I reached out to that I kind of thought I could get, and they never even opened the DM. So maybe it'll be the same kind of thing. Maybe they'll do it like a year from now, and then, you know, happily ever after, we'll do a whole podcast series. But all right. So let's back up a little bit. You've just released this gorgeous record. Everyone's raving about it. You're feeling good. You got to be feeling good. And it's a long way to get to here, though, right? Like you've been doing this a long time, and you've worked really hard to get to this spot. Can we talk a little bit about kind of that early musical awakening for you, starting with sort of your, you know, childhood, but then especially when you started picking up and the guitar and playing.
Yeah. Well, I was always, I got multiple siblings and I was always the one just singing out loud all the time. I remember getting in trouble because I'd just sing in class. Even in middle school, I had a teacher who was obsessed with that song, Que Sera. I remember I would just sing it to get on her good side. Like if I pissed her off, I'd start singing that song and she'd be happy. Like I just always loved singing. I think a lot of that comes from my dad is such a music lover. Any time I spent with him when I was a kid, you know, if we were in his truck, there's music on. He has a musical family. I didn't grow up playing instruments, but I started in high school. I just loved classic rock. You know, I wanted to be Jimmy Page, borrowed an electric guitar from someone, and eventually got an acoustic guitar and started learning chords. I was probably like, I don't know, 16. And next thing you know, I'm learning chords and start learning how to sing and play at the same time. And honestly, it was kind of a rough time of my life, just going through a lot as a family. And I gravitated towards playing guitar and singing like it was a drug.
Mm.
And honestly, it's still therapy for me. And that's why I kind of went from wanting to be like Jimmy Page to, oh man, I want to write songs. And that really got, you know, into more the singer-songwriter stuff, more country, Americana, folk music. I like a lot of music. That's what I gravitate towards. And
same,
man, I just kept writing about things to process. I didn't always know how to talk about what I was going through, or what I had been through, or what was on my mind. And music became my outlet. I'm not like this super creative, artistic person. Just write songs. But like outside of that, I'm not very creative. To write a song. Not even a great musician. Especially for how long I've been playing. I'm not that good. Yeah. But I love writing songs.
I love that so much. And I can relate to a lot of it. Okay. Something you said to me previously is that there was a time when you were listening to songs and sort of like along with those songs, writing your own stuff. Can you talk about that process a little bit?
Yeah.
How it came about?
I remember when I started writing songs and I was really young. I was working in these different cafes, coffee shops, whatever. And every time it'd be slow and I'd hear a song in the overhead and I just take a little bit of receipt paper and it could be a hit song. And I would just write my own words to it, to the melody and the rhythm and everything of what was being played. And then go home and make it something completely different. But those were like templates for me. And that's not my normal way of writing, but it was just how I did some of my songs early on. It was just an exercise I did to try to get myself to keep writing. And some of my songs are written that way. They don't sound anything like the song I wrote it to, but that was kind of the point. Like because I was busy and at work, I couldn't sit down with a guitar and I just write real quick on a receipt paper and stuff it in my pocket. And I used to have a pile of them.
Man, it's so wonderful. So are you then sifting through that pile for ideas, or was it just sort of, like you said, just an exercise for you?
More so like ideas. Now I just grab my phone and do a voice memo or, on the notes, write something. So I still have a lot of ideas. They're not on receipt paper anymore, but I collect them, and sometimes I would just pull those out and be like, can I write a whole song? Because sometimes it's just a line. Other times, you grab something and you write an entire song. It's just rare, but it's happened, and those are magic moments. Denial was written in like 15 minutes.
Okay. I've expressed my love for Denial to you, and I want to re-express that love and ask you more about this song. Like I was looking at lyrics earlier from your record. I pulled up Denial's lyrics. And it kind of struck me, at relatively speaking, how few lyrics there are when I was looking at it, because it's, to me, such an incredibly powerful song. And it's the one that grabbed me more than any of the others the first few times I listened to the record. And I connected with that song more than I did the other songs early on. Now, I've spent so much time with it now that there's all other, there's so many different songs that I want to talk about, and so many different things that have come up. But like, the initial grab me by the throat was Denial. And as I was looking at the lyrics today, I was like, oh shit. It feels to me like there's so many lyrics, but there aren't. There's just so much emotion and so much to that economy of words. Can you talk about, do you agree with me on that, A? And then, and yeah. B, like, can you talk a little bit about that and sort of those choices?
Yeah, so I mean, there's like a couple of verses in that song. You know, different people have interpreted it different ways. I wanted to keep it simple and not out of spite, but out of kind of being intentional about the content of that song for anyone that ever listened to any like 90s Christian music. It kind of has a very similar rhythm that was very on purpose, because of the content of the song. But I wanted to keep the chord simple. I wanted to keep everything simple. I mean, there's what, like just a couple verses in it, a chorus and a bridge.
Yep.
It just repeats some stuff, but yeah, that song I wanted to keep simple. We almost didn't even throw any electric guitar on it because of it. I'm glad we did, but we were trying to keep that one just straightforward, nothing crazy, but get a point across, tell a story. And that, I should write a novel on why I wrote that song.
For real, man. Yeah. I don't know how much you feel comfortable expounding on that, but like, you know, just thinking about thinking about the universality of that feeling of just that even just the lyric, right? Which you call faith sure looks like denial. Like, there's, you could take that in so many different directions as a consumer of that lyric. And I know for me, I project my own upbringing in the Baptist church on it, but that could go in so many different directions, and you could receive it or project onto it so many different things. How much of this sort of the story behind that song do you feel comfortable telling?
Well, I mean, it's 100% personal. I can share a little bit. Like, so I remember having a conversation with my dad a couple weeks after his father passed. And, you know, that was a strained relationship. I didn't even know that he passed until a couple weeks after. My dad said, hey, I just want to let you know. And he started just telling me about his experience going back home before that happened. And he said a line. He said, you know, like, he was talking about something that happened. He said, you know, I feel like some people call that faith, but I don't know. That's just denial to me. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, shit, that's a song. Because I feel like there's so much of that, especially in the culture that we're in, kind of in this Bible Belt area, really everywhere, of, I'm trying to think of a better way to say it. So you call faith, sure looks like denial. I think we call a lot of things faith, but really it's our own denial. That makes sense. The song talks about my grandmother being next to my grandfather's bed, thinking like he's going to be okay, but he's on his deathbed. And maybe because she thinks because of her faith, there's going to be a different outcome. And it's denial of what's actually happening.
Mm-hmm.
So I know for me, I spent a while in a cult when I was younger. And I feel like my faith blinded me mm-hmm. when I was doing that. And I made it out. That's what the song No Amazing Grace is about. But does all that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense. I want to talk about No Amazing Grace, but I also, you made me think about something because I've really been diving deep into the questions of faith lately. I mean, people listening are probably rolling their eyes since I talk about it just about every episode, but I think more so than ever right now in my early 40s, going through this huge transition in my life and thinking about what faith is, what I have faith in, what I don't have faith in, not just spiritually, but institution wise, relationship wise, career wise, all those kind of choices. And I think it's hard for me to speak in any sort of concrete or universal way about these questions because I feel like I'm just going to wrestle them my whole life and I'm comfortable with that. But one of the places I land on is, and I think this is why the song was helpful for me, is I kind of land on the fact, on the idea of like, if faith is helpful for you in some way of any kind, if faith is helpful for a person, awesome. So long as that faith is not negatively impacting other people. And I end up pissing a lot of people off with that. You know, like people get really defensive. And I think that's that song to me strikes that particular chord.
Yeah. Good. Because I've had some people, someone was like, oh, what's with this stupid religious song? I was like, did you listen to it? You listen to the words, you're gonna feel a little different. And it's not to be mean or anything, it's just my experience. I had to step out of ways that I started to think and ways I started to treat people and the things I started to believe and the way I started to act, like, wasn't, and it was because of this faith that I had adopted, I guess. And I had to step away from it, man. I was at one point, like looking back, there are points in my life where I'm like, you were an asshole and you were self-righteous and you weren't kind to people. Mm. And that was, you know, that's on me, but I allowed that to happen. And taking a step back from that, you know, being that way, I've got a couple songs that are inspired by it. Same with, you know, Sally kind of highlights some of those things, and which is one of my favorite ones. It's the only true, like, full acoustic song on the album.
I think those are my three favorite songs, or Denial, Sally, and No Amazing Grace. My three favorite songs on the record. So
yeah,
that's perfect. And speaking of which, like, from both a creative standpoint and from the emotion behind it and the story behind it, I looked at Denial's lyrics and I was thinking about the song and reading the lyrics again. And then I pulled up No Amazing Grace, and it's the juxtaposition of those two. Cause I think of them in some ways as maybe not companions, but kind of like there's similar themes and similar, they take me to a similar place.
Yeah.
But No Amazing Grace, I mean, it is dense with lyrics, and you know, it's not a ton of them, but it's dense, right? Mm-hmm. And so, like, I mean, I look at that first verse, like, fierce desire, razor blades, cut them down when they're in your way, singing choirs, lights on your face, sweet hymnals fill the place. The imagery there, the way that you're setting the stage, that we, those of us who have been in some of those similar situations, and I know this one's a little different, but yeah, those one who's been in similar situations, can put ourselves in that space so easily and feel certain things. You know, I recently was watching a service. I've connected with a person who is very spiritual, but not necessarily denominational or anything like that. And I was watching this service that they watch, which is like kind of this non-denominational God is love kind of service. And the message itself was great, because it was all love and peace, and I couldn't find fault in it at all. But the way I was triggered by the stage, the microphone, the even like the cadence of the speaking, right? It was like everything else I was down with, but how quickly it snapped me back into the trauma that I feel from the church. My trauma is a little different from your trauma there. Can you talk about No Amazing Grace and what inspired it and
how you got there? You know, it's funny how this sad song came about. It was like 1 a.m. Abby and the kids weren't home, but they were out of town or something. I woke up and I'd fallen asleep to watching Ancient Aliens by myself on Netflix. And I wake up to a different episode and they're talking about how they believed all these big cult leaders back in the day were either extraterrestrials or like led by aliens. And I'm like, I just started thinking to myself, I was like, well, that's interesting. And I just started laughing. I was like, you know, I was in this cult when I was younger and I finally had enough and left. And then years later, like it ended bad. I wasn't there for that, but I only heard about it. And I just remember thinking like, oh, they were aliens. That explains it all. You know, just kind of jokingly. I grabbed my guitar and wrote this sad song is kind of like a nod at my time in the cult and it falling. And there's some people I love that I got to meet through there, but it was very destructive and legalistic, and it created things in me that, you know, I'm not proud of. And luckily, like I said, I've moved past that. But you know, I take a hard look at myself and be like, "Oh, that's not good." And so, that's where that song came from. So I was living in a bus and I was traveling all over the U.S. and Canada and playing music and being part of these speaking events. And we'd go to churches, rehabs, women's shelters, anything. And you know, there were some great things that we did, but at the end of the day, it wasn't a good place, and I don't regret it. But I've learned a lot, and it's part of who I am. You know, I have some great memories and some not so great.
Is regret is that just not part of your nature in general, or is that something that you've worked through with this particular experience?
I don't know. Maybe with this particular experience, because it's, you know, there's a lot of things that I've been through that I wouldn't wish on anybody. But had I not gone through those things, where would I be?
Yeah.
Maybe in a better place. I don't know. Maybe not. That question will never be answered, but I don't want to regret. I mean, there are things I wish I've done different before, but I try to have a good perspective on things like that.
I don't feel you like. Go ahead.
I was just saying, like, had I, you know, just being honest, had I not gone through the childhood that I went through, I probably wouldn't be a songwriter. I'm not saying like I wish that I had these experiences, because I grew up wishing I didn't, but I can take them and turn them into something. I don't know necessarily that I'd say like I'm grateful for certain things, but I can take this mess and try to use it for good.
Being grateful for some of those things that you've been put through, again, you're just hitting all the things that I've been thinking about lately. Being grateful for the things that you've been put through is something that, or that happened to you, right? Like not things that, choices that you made necessarily, but that being said, of course, also most of the choices we make are a product of whatever is happening to us, and we can only react however we don't have any control over them happening to us. But I've been trying to like reflect on being grateful for the opportunities presented, if this makes any sense, by the things that have happened to me, especially in recent years, you know, and trying to look at those as learning experiences, which sounds a little cliche, but it's a lot easier to say than it is to actually put into practice, to be grateful for. Somebody asked me recently, do you regret moving to Orlando? Because I moved to Orlando for my relationship. And 10 years later, now that relationship's over. I'm like, no, I don't regret that at all. I mean, I don't think there's a marinade if I don't move to Orlando, for example. And that has given and given and given and given. You and I are sitting here talking. I don't think that would have happened if I hadn't moved here. And I could go on and on and on, you know, you hear.
Yeah. Oh,
you know,
I mean, you know, I'm married to Abby and we have three amazing kids. Like, I could take one little thing back. If that didn't happen, would this exist? And I don't even want to think about that, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think working on the way I respond, like there's a lot to be grateful for. Like, yeah, there are things that I sing about that refer to the past. Like, you know, my parents have been sober for years. And there are songs that talk about times when they weren't.
Mm.
That's just my way of dealing with it. But like, man, my family's come such a long way. I'm proud of my family. And things are way different. But I writing does help me deal with it because the things are still there. But, you know, the fact that I can sit and have an honest conversation with them and we're not beating each other up. It's just we're just going to talk about it. Like, that's a gift in itself because we weren't always at that point.
I was thinking the other day about, you just, again, striking a chord with thinking about making things and how healing making things is, and specifically writing for me, right? So I write songs as a serious hobby. I wrote one the other day. I was in Jacksonville, right? I was watching BJ Barham put on a masterclass.
Okay.
And I just started scribbling in my notebook. And then next thing you know, I was like, oh shit, that's a song. And when I finally got to my computer, I was able to, because for me, the process is that it's always, I handwrite almost everything. And then if it's in my phone, it's like in the internet somewhere, you know, it's often in the inner tubes. I don't know. But if I put it in here, I'm much more likely to return to it, especially if it means something to me. And then if I put it onto a document, then I'll take it and put it onto a Google Doc. And so like, I'm looking at the song right now and I, you know, it's not on the level of a Sadler Vaden or a Jonathan Payton, but I'm super fucking proud of it. Like, I'm just really grateful for this song, you know? And I realized like I needed that song to process a thing that I was going through. And it really, honestly, unlocked, like, that thing is still there, but I'm able to just go, that it's over here now. It's not here, all up in my face, right?
Man, keep. My encouragement is keep going. You know, one of the things that encourages my wife and I so much to keep doing what we're doing, you know, we're a big family. We don't play a ton of shows. Like, you know, we're mom and dad and husband and wife first before we're musicians. And so like when we go play a show and we share about these things and sing these songs and someone comes to us telling us like, they felt alone in what they were going through, but because of us putting the words, what we're going through, they feel less alone. And man, that is a beautiful, beautiful thing. And sometimes we hear these heartbreaking stories, but there's such humanity in that moment that's as broken as, and it's a beautiful thing. And, I know there are songs that make me feel less alone, that make, you know, someone sharing their experience means so much to me. So man, keep putting those things to words. Like, I don't know, it's a beautiful thing. I love music and sad music is my favorite.
Yeah, same. Yeah.
Big smile on my face. Like, man, your music's sad. I'm like, I know, I love it.
Yeah, you're in the right place, sir.
Yeah.
To be having this conversation. Well, dude, We have a limited amount of time left and I want to honor your time, but we usually kind of start to wrap things up on what you're getting down on. So the art that has you fired up at the moment, it could be a song, it could be a film you've seen or a book you're reading. What are you fired up about right now?
100% is Jeffrey Martin.
Oh God, I'm relatively new to Jeffrey Martin. Holy shit, that guy's a genius.
Yeah, I went and I saw him. My wife got me and some friends got me tickets for my birthday, for like a week after my birthday. I went to go see him in Atlanta. And then last minute went up like less than a week later and saw him again in Chattanooga and was able to pick up a couple of his vinyl. But if I had to pick a song that I'm hooked on right now, his song Garden.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You heard that one?
Yeah, I have. Yeah.
Man.
It was on the last record, right? The most recent one?
All time. I mean, all of his stuff. His older albums. I mean, he's got some songs that just knock you off your feet, man. Yeah. And I love it. They're so stripped down and it's about the writing. And you know, it's raining here in North Georgia right now. I feel like I could go drive for the next 2 hours just listening to his music and not say a word.
Mm.
Like it's, yeah, I would say that's what I've been hooked on the most lately.
It's interesting. He's come up a few times in the last 6 or 8 months on the show. He and Anna Tibble have come up on the show quite a bit. And, cause I feel like there's some, he seems to be the, one of those songwriters that songwriters really love, right? He's the songwriter's songwriters for lack of a better way to say it. But the passion with which the way you just spoke about him, I feel like I've had like at least four other guests just gush in that same way. I missed him last time he was in Orlando, and if he ever comes back down this way, I'm not gonna miss it. I didn't know who he was back then. Like I'm relatively new.
So worth it.
Yeah. It's fun to be relatively new to somebody that good. It's fun to sort of like, you know, just get on the train a little bit late, you know, and get to go back and listen to the catalog and get a sense of it because he is so damn good.
Yeah, one of my favorites. Sure.
Well, dude, congratulations on the record and thank you so much for this. This was such a wonderful conversation. In fact, I'm going to go spin the record right fucking now as I type this up and start to work on it. I don't think I'm going to have much editing to do on this one and I'm going to get it turned around right away because I'm excited for folks to hear it. And you've been an absolute delight. And I'm just so grateful for connecting and how much you've connected with me and with the show. So thank you so much,
man. No, thank you. I'm very grateful and looking forward to putting this thing out, man.
Yeah. Heck yeah. All right, dude. Well, I will, I'll keep you posted and have a wonderful night and a wonderful rainy night in Georgia.
Yeah, man, you have a good one.
All right, dude. See ya. Jonathan Payton, y'all. Thank you so much, Jonathan. Thank all of you for listening. What a pleasure. JonathanPaytonMusic.com for all things Jonathan Payton. The song you're hearing in this episode is the one we talked about at some length, which is Denial. I am crazy about this record. That's a standout, but it's top to bottom absolutely fantastic. My vinyl copy of Nothing Here is the Same arrived last week, y'all. It is beautiful. Go get a copy of that. Follow Jonathan on social media. He is not only an incredible songwriter, but has proven himself to me to be just a sweetheart and somebody that's really easy to root for and somebody that it's really easy to spend your hard-earned coin on. MarinadePodcast.com for all things The Marinade. Follow us on all the things, y'all. Follow us on YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, Reddit, Spoutable, Twitter, Blue Sky, Mastodon. We're especially active on Twitter, and I'm pretty active on Instagram, but I check all those things. Subscribe and give us a 5-star rating on your podcast app. Tell us a friend about the show. These are all free ways to support The Marinade. Go do that right now while you're listening, please. It makes a huge difference for us and costs so little of your time and energy. If you really like what we're doing, please consider joining our Patreon community. Y'all, for just $2 a month, you can gain access to Patreon exclusive content. Stuff like our show, Jason's Journey, where I talk about the moments that shape my creative life and provide a window into the process of making The Marinade. One of the best days of the month, y'all,
is recording our other show on Patreon, which is What We're Getting Down On. And that's with my dear friend, the brilliant and hilarious Peter Haraldson. That thing that I do at the end of the show where I talk about what we're getting down on, you know, what art has you inspired at the moment. Peter and I do like an extended version of that every month. And it's a chance for us to connect just as friends and people who love each other, but also a chance to share the art that has us really excited. And it's fun because Peter and I have a lot of commonalities in the art that we love, but also are pretty different in a lot of ways. And so it makes for what I think is a really fun and interesting dynamic. You can try a free trial, y'all. Free trial of Patreon. See if you like it. No pressure. And try it for 7 days. Set a reminder on your phone in case you want to cancel. Keep going if you dig it. We really appreciate it if you can swing it. If you want to support the show financially, but you don't want to commit to a monthly subscription, I totally get that. You can Venmo or PayPal us. It's just at The Marinade. All the money goes right back into the show. We are going to cover Bonnaroo hopefully this year again, and we're planning on covering Laurel Cove Festival in Kentucky. I hope I got the name of that right. Jonathan's playing, and a bunch of other wonderful acts are playing there in the Cumberland Gap. I really want to just basically spend all of June doing some like Marinade stuff around Appalachia. Just kind of get up there, record as much as possible, write as much as possible. And, you know, this financial support of our Patreon patrons and folks who tip us makes such a difference when it comes to making those decisions. But hey, listen, above all, this is a free show and we're just so thankful that you listen, that you spread the word about The Marinade. Until next time, go out and create something. Cheers, y'all.